This is Jim Colby from Vox Urbana, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Test, test.
Testing, testing.
Bump me up.
Bump, 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 bump it up. Bump, bump, bump it up.
That's good. Bump. Hey, it's me, Holly Tanner.
And it's me, Justin Weaver.
We are your co-hosts of Something to Talk About, which you can only hear on
WGXE 90.7 FM.
Your place for live local radio. Be sure to tune in second and fourth Wednesday of every month at
2 p.m. till 3 p.m.
We'll talk to you then.
Don't miss us.
What's going on, Justin? Anything?
I don't know. You know, I just got a phone call the other day.
Oh.
I can't see on these telemarketers. It's like
off
the wall crazy. I don't know, Holly. Let's talk about it.
People are talking, talking about people. I hear them whisper, you won't believe it.
Desmarchand, a proud supporter of WGXE, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers. Desmarchand.com. Desmarchind.com on Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
All right. All together now. Ready?
All Together Now is a new evening news show brought to you by WGXE in Green.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXE in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, July the 24th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump goes after security clearances of Brennan and other vocal critics. Also on the Tuesday rundown, the efficiency repeal cost Indiana ratepayers millions, and veterans urge Congress to reauthorize public lands funding. First, our top story, President Trump threatened Monday to revoke security clearances from top Obama administration officials. The Washington Times reports this is a retaliation by the White House that legal scholars say would be unprecedented, but not illegal. On the president's security clearance hit list are reported to be former CIA Director John O'Brien, former Director of National Security James Clapper, former FBI Director James Comey, former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and National Security Agency Director Michael Hayden. That's according to White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. Sanders said, quote, they politicized and in some cases actually monetized their public service security clearances. The Washington Times notes that former intelligence officials typically do keep their high-level security clearances after leaving government jobs and sometimes provide informal advice to current officials. The repeal of Indiana's energy efficiency standard 4 years ago has cost ratepayers millions of dollars and slowed job growth. That's according to a new report from the Applied Economics Clinic and Citizens Action Coalition of Indiana. We get the details from Catherine Davis Young.
Indiana's short-lived energy efficiency program included projects like home energy assessments, investments in energy-saving lighting, weatherization, and educational programs. The new report shows the program created 19,000 jobs in the state. But since the program's 2014 repeal, that growth has declined, and ratepayers have lost out on about $140 million in savings. Brindise Woods is one of the report's authors.
Energy efficiency is good for everyone. It's one of the most cost-effective resources that we have at our disposal to not just save ratepayers money, but also it has a bunch of ancillary effects that are good for the economy at large and for the state.
The Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission passed the Energy Efficiency Resource Standard under Governor Daniels in 2009. The program had asked the state's five investor-owned utilities to cut back on energy by 2% over 10 years. But following pressure from utility providers and some manufacturers, the program was repealed under Governor Pence in 2014. Indiana was the first state to roll back energy-saving goals.
Advocates say that Indiana needs regulatory programs to keep costs down because ratepayers don't have any choice in which utility they must use. North Carolina's Racial Justice Act, taken off the books 5 years ago when it was overturned by the state assembly, Stephanie Carson reports that called into question the destiny of four inmates who already had successfully argued that race was a factor in their sentencing.
Their cases now are before the state Supreme Court, and this month a coalition of some unlikely partners is working to convert their death sentence to life in prison without parole. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the North Carolina Association of Black Lawyers, and North Carolina Council of Churches, among others, filed briefs with the state Supreme Court. Cassandra Stubbs is director of the ACLU Capital Punishment Project.
We're at this moment when the North Carolina Supreme Court will have to decide whether it wants to sweep all of this evidence of racial bias under the rug, whether the Constitution permits that, or whether we are going to, in fact, get hearings on these claims.
The Racial Justice Act allowed death row inmates who successfully argued that race was a factor in their sentencing to have their term converted to life without parole. The North Carolina Supreme Court now will decide whether the repeal of the Racial Justice Act means the four prisoners can be executed.
One of the prosecutors supporting the prisoners' civil rights claims is a former Virginia Attorney General, Mark Early. He oversaw 36 executions during his tenure.
Lead, even in small doses, is a harmful element to consume. The effects can be drastic for children still developing, which is why Illinois has proposed rules for child care facilities on testing for lead in water. But some environmental advocates believe that the rules need to be adjusted before finalization this fall, starting with removal of the lead's main source. Lindsay McCormick, project manager for the Environmental Defense Fund, says lead service lines are to blame for much of the water contamination.
They contribute the most lead in drinking water, and so if they're present, up to 50 to 75% of the lead in drinking water is coming from those lead service lines.
Lead service lines connect the main sources of water from the streets to connecting buildings and businesses, and many are located in Chicago, where they were used until 1986.
And finally, Eric Gladys tells us some U.S. veterans are urging members of Congress to permanently reauthorize and fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund, a national conservation and recreation program which is set to expire in September.
The fund has helped improve access to the nation's public lands, and Garrett Reppenhagen, who served in Kosovo and Iraq, says places including Colorado's Great Sand Dunes National Park and Cheyenne Mountain State Park and others helped him readjust to civilian life.
Places like that, when you get away from Netflix and your cell phones, you can have the quality conversations with the people that you love. And it's an incredible opportunity for our veterans to find some sort of therapy after coming home from war.
By the way, the funds also help preserve military heritage sites, battlefields, and monuments. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany has a flash flood watch in effect for the entire WGXC listening area through Wednesday. Forecast for Tuesday is mostly cloudy skies
and 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms, the high near 79. Tuesday night, there's another 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms overnight, with low around 70. Wednesday, 80% chance of rain, mostly after 8 a.m. Some of the storms could be heavy Wednesday, with a high near 75, and a low around 67 Wednesday night, with another 80% chance of rain. Thursday, again, there's a 60% chance of rain, with a high near 80, a low around 65 Thursday night as the rain tapers off. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio. Columbia County's Rasputina perform at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock on August 9th. Here's Columbia County's Rasputina with Snow Hen of Austerlitz from their Sister Kinderhook album.
They say not far away, in fact upon that hill. They say that there's a little girl there still. She wasn't raised like the other kids. Less than a snow hen of Austerlitz. Some birds as pets, that her baby is a human she forgets, and a tiny wire pen that little girl still sits, less than the snow hen of Austerlitz. She must be 10 or 11 now, and she's pretty but she don't have all her wits. She is the snow hen of Austerlitz. Chirps like a bird. All the birds around, they taught the little girl their language. When she's not understood, she starts to get real angry. So she waves her hands around just like they were her wings. Oh, but when she's happy, you should hear her sing. Snow hen of Austerlitz.
want to lose it. It's like a favorite song that we love to sing. Every time we hear the music and we're in this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever. Like berries on the vine, it gets sweeter all the time.
Here's an interview from our partners at WOOCLP from the Sanctuary for Media Art in Troy, New York. You can go to the SoundCloud page for Media Sanctuary or look up the Sanctuary for Media Art webpage or Facebook page online for more information or to hear the complete interview.
Sarah Friedland is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and the director of Skidmore College's Storytellers Institute. She recently discussed the work done by the Institute with WOOC correspondent Aaron Pedinati.
I'm Aaron Pedinati, and today I'm interviewing Sarah Friedland, the director of Skidmore College's Storytellers Institute, a summer program sponsored by Skidmore's Documentary Studies Collaborative, about the nature of the Institute and the types of projects it pursues. In addition to serving as the Institute's director, Sarah is an award-winning documentary filmmaker. After the debut of her feature documentary, Thing With No Name, in 2009, she was named one of the top 10 independent filmmakers to watch by Independent Magazine. Her feature documentary, The Rink, won the Paul Robeson Award from the Newark Museum and was shown on PBS, as was her recent documentary, Jeepney, from 2015, which she produced with its director, Essie Cassie. She is currently co-directing the feature documentary Lid in Exile with Rami Yunus. Sarah, thanks very much for coming on the program today. It's great to have you as a guest on the Hudson Mohawk Evening Magazine.
Thank you so much for having me, Aaron.
So to start out, can you tell us about the basics of the Storytellers Institute? What is it and what does it do?
Sure. So the Storytellers Institute is part of the John B. Moore Documentary Collaborative at Skidmore College, otherwise known as MDocs. And MDocs is not a major or minor at Skidmore, but it's a documentary collaborative where students and faculty and staff can learn documentary storytelling strategies and then take that back into their own research so they can kind of use those techniques to make their research more accessible to a wider audience and to explore it in different kinds of storytelling modes. So MDocs is, we think of documentary in a very kind of big tent way. Most people just think of documentary as film, but we think about audio, photo, performance, really anything that is nonfiction based. So the Storytellers Institute kind of takes that wonderful view and practice and brings it into the summer. And what it is a 5-week residency at Skidmore College with Skidmore students, faculty, and what we call visiting fellows. So it's a small group of about maybe 15 people total, depending on the year. And everybody is making work alongside each other, most people around a specific theme. And again, these people are working in all different mediums, from audio to performance to film, so really kind of anything that's oriented towards nonfiction. And the visiting fellows are professional documentary makers who are, you know, pretty far along in their career, or at least have just finished kind of doctoral programs or MFAs, and are really looking for a place where they can be in residence and work on a specific project, but also engage intellectually with this really unique community of makers.
So can you tell us about some of the projects that participants in the Institute's summer programs have produced?
Sure. I'm going to tell you about a few different projects from each of these three groups. So so faculty, students, and then visiting fellows. And these three projects came out of our 2017 year in which we were considering space and place as the theme. So we had this really wonderful faculty fellow at Skidmore by the name of Dr. Diana Barnes, who is in the World Languages Department at Skidmore. And she has a background in journalism, and she made a really incredible podcast that was actually aired on WAMC later that summer on 51%, and it's still online, actually. You can find it there. And she is also an activist in the working with undocumented people in the capital region. And she made this really beautiful personal podcast with one of the people she works with, who is an undocumented migrant laborer, who was facing fear of deportation. It was kind of just a look into this woman's life and how her daily life is, and also the kinds of things she does to fight this, you know, her impending deportation. So we also had a really fantastic student fellow that year, Sindiso Mufiko, who is a Skidmore student. And she was working with one of our faculty, who's actually the incoming director, Adam Tinkle. And they were working on a project in conjunction with the Albany Symphony Orchestra. I don't know if you remember, but last year, Albany Symphony Orchestra did this project called Water Music, which was along the Erie Canal, and they were kind of revisiting different sites of the Erie Canal. And they had brought in young composers to talk about kind of the history of different canal parts and points through their music. And so they came to Skidmore and were looking for a collaboration with Skidmore, and Cindy and Adam kind of jumped on the project. And Cindy is originally from Zimbabwe, and she and Adam, along with Jordan and Dim, found these, who is a professor in the history department and the outgoing director of MDocs, found all this really interesting historical information about the Albany point of the Erie Canal. And what Cindy did was select some of those, you know, texts that she had found in the archive, and she had other international students read the texts. And then the composer kind of took that and mixed that with the music. And so it was this really incredible way of telling this history through voices that you never get to hear in the history at all, these international students. So that was an incredible project, and it was actually performed as part of Water Music. And then the other project that I want to tell you about is by one of our visiting fellows in 2017. And she is actually a local artist from the capital region, Daisha Devon Harris. And she's primarily a photographer, although she also works in other media. And she was starting to work on a new project of hers called Just Beyond the River, a folktale series, in which she is kind of thinking about the legacy of slave narratives in U.S. history and combining them with photographs of unknown African-American people, and then kind of taking these photographs and making transparencies over them and floating them over bodies of water. And then she then re-photographs them with different kind of ephemeral natural things like leaves and shells and stones underneath. And the result is just this beautiful collaged manifestation of these people in relationship to slave narratives that she also curates. And this body of work is actually currently on view in the gallery at the Albany Airport, I think through September, and I really encourage people to go see it.
So now I want to get into the nitty-gritty of what it means to teach the art of nonfiction storytelling. Two questions on this front. You can maybe take them at the same time. In your experience of mentoring students in the production of documentaries and other types of storytelling media, how much of it is about the technical side of media production, like things like understanding how to use recording devices and editing software, and how much of it is about the storytelling side, by which I mean knowing how to put a story together in an emotionally and intellectually engaging way? And my other question is, given how often people feel personally invested in and attached to the material that they're crafting stories about, there's challenges in the strength of feeling that they have about it. And can you tell us a bit about how you've negotiated the challenge of these strong feelings that people can have about their own work and how your own experience as a documentary filmmaker has informed your efforts in this regard, particularly as someone who has to give them critical feedback about their work?
This is such a great question, and I really appreciate all the different things that you're bringing into it. First of all, I would say I absolutely love the part of my job in which I get to teach young people and faculty, and also get to engage in a kind of educational dialogue with the visiting fellows about the practice of documentary. It's like, I find it such an incredibly feeding thing for my own practice. So it's not, for me, it's not really a one way, like I'm imparting information to people. It's really kind of like a two way experience that ends up really bringing a lot to my own work. And I think you've kind of pinpointed one of the major challenges of teaching documentary, which is that no matter what media you use, and I'm primarily a filmmaker, so I'll speak to that. It is an incredibly, you know, technical way to express yourself. And so you really do have to use the tools and be comfortable knowing the tools in order to be successful. But you also have to understand the art and the craft of this kind of work, of storytelling, of, you know, creatively expressing nonfiction, you know, parts of our reality. And so, you know, there's a lot you have to cover at once. And for me, I think the theory and the practice, so like the kind of understanding the history and the different ways of thinking about documentary as a form and as an art and as an approach, go hand in hand with learning the tools. And so I don't actually separate them when I'm teaching. And kind of the most important thing for me when I'm especially dealing with students, with undergraduate students, is talking about documentary ethics. And, you know, in this practice, the other thing that makes it really rich, but also a really complicated thing to teach, is that we're dealing with real people and real places, and all of those carry a great kind of ethical obligation, both to the people that are, you know, in our works, but also to the audience and also to ourselves as makers. And I try to kind of instill how important it is to my students to kind of understand that they are making an impact on people's lives as they're doing this process, and that that impact can be both wonderful but also really painful and you know, not healthy for people. And so, you know, how do you kind of work through those things? And then I think the other thing is, you asked about how me as a maker has kind of informed my teaching and how, what I bring to it. And I was, when I was thinking about that question, I guess one of the things that brought came up for me was actually an exercise that I had to go through in graduate school that I do with my advanced students, which is a self-inventory exercise that one of my mentors, Kelly Anderson, adapted from a documentary textbook by Michael Rabinger. And the self-inventory exercise is really kind of something you're supposed to go through before you decide what you want to make films about, because I think this is also a really important thing that you have to teach young documentarians to consider. So what is it in you that makes you interested in a specific topic? What kind of things have you gone through in your own life that make you the right person to tell that story? What do you bring to it? And so this exercise kind of takes you on a deep kind of self-analyzing journey to understand like the themes in your own life and what that means in terms of your own storytelling practice and what kind of things you bring to this practice, and also what kind of stories maybe are the ones that you should be telling. And then, you know, for me, I think it's really important. I am primarily a documentary maker, but I've worked in a lot of other media, and I like to experiment a lot. And so I think it's important to have kind of like a practice of experimentation and play in one's work. And I try to instill that in my students, because if you don't kind of find the joy in your process, then you won't keep doing it.
So from what you said, it sounds like the skills at a technical level and the storytelling skills are so intertwined they can't be completely separated. At an ethical level, it's important to be self-reflexive about why you're interested in a particular story, but it's also important to retain an openness to your content and to what that you're trying to do, so that you can also be effective.
হ্যালো, আপনারা WGXC 90.7 FM রেডিও স্টেশন শুনছেন, একরা ক্যাটস্কিল হাডসন থেকে শ্রোতা সমর্থিত হ্যান্ডজন রেডিও কলম্বিয়া এবং গ্রিন কাউন্টি।
WGXC believes in community. We are a hands-on participatory radio station and serve many communities. WGXC's volunteer programmers range in age from 9 to 84 and come from all walks of life. What they produce is as varied as the communities we serve. WGXC is an unbiased source for local news and cultural affairs information. Programming made by and for youth airs daily, and our celebrated music programming is unique, diverse, and eclectic.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
That's 2011 music from Sid Touré with Nisiad Gendon, or It Is to You That I Sing, from the album Colma. Sid Touré performs at the Half Moon in Hudson on July 30th.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
Tuesday, July 24th, the Hudson Area Library has a creative writing and performance workshop for ages 8 to 18. Joey De Jesus, a 2017 poetry fellow and the Apogee Journal poetry editor, leads the workshop Tuesday, July 24th at the Hudson Area Library. Senegal performer Amadou Diallo performs 6 p.m. at the Tivoli Free Library in Tivoli, Tuesday, July 24th. J.D. McPherson is a singer-songwriter performing at Club Helsinki in Hudson on Tuesday, July 24th, 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 25th, the Hudson Area Library has a creative writing and performance workshop continuing with Joey De Jesus. Charlie Parr, a Duluth-based songwriter, performs Wednesday, July 25th at 7 p.m. at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale in Hudson. Also, there's an evening of music with Spike Priggen, Andy Chernoff, Ted Barron, and Doug Weigel playing obscure covers, some originals, with Priggen on vocals, Chernoff on bass, Barron on guitar, and Doug Weigel on drums. That's at Hilo in Catskill, Wednesday, July 25th, 7:30 p.m. Thursday, July 26th, there's a screening of the environmental documentary Albatross by the artist Chris Jordan. Albatrossthefilm.com is where you can find out more information. That showing is at 6 p.m. at the Village of Coxsackie Hall, 119 Mansion Street in Coxsackie. Also Thursday, July 26th, Hal and Rain, the Mountain Movers and Pigeons. Pigeons are from Columbia County. Hal and Rain's from California. New Haven is where the Mountain Movers hail from. They're performing at 8 p.m. at the Root Cellar, Thursday, July 26th in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Basilica's nonfiction screening series shows Blowing Up at 8 p.m. Thursday, July 26th, about the criminal justice system. Thursday, July 26th, there's also a performance from Bobby Previtt, the local jazz drummer and composer. At High Low in Catskill, he'll be there at 8:30 p.m., one of his Blueprints shows. There should be a live web stream of the show at wgxc.org. Click on the Listen Now button at the top of any wgxc.org page to tune in, or turn out to High Low in Catskill, 365 Main Street, 8:30 p.m. Thursday, July 26th for the Bobby Previtt performance. Friday, July 27th, the Jamal Jackson Dance Company is at PS 21 in Chatham for a 1 p.m. afternoon performance. Katrina Lanfranco gives a visiting artist lecture at the Luthier Barn Auction Ring in Wasaic, 6 p.m. Friday, July 27th. The Edmund Niall Hook Preserve in Rensselaerville has a potluck and evening hike Friday, July 27th, 6:30 p.m. Sponsored by the Hook Preserve. And there's a full moon scheduled that night. Also, at the Root Cellar in Greenfield, Massachusetts, Friday, July 27th, Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. performs with his band Heavy Blanket. Scott Helen's Guitar Army of One also performs at the Root Cellar in Greenfield, Massachusetts, 7:30 p.m. Friday, July 27th. Also that night, the Ferris Sirjar Trio performs Middle Eastern music, bossa, flamenco, jazz, and pop at PS 21 in Chatham, Friday, July 27th. Mamadou Kelly performs at the Half Moon in Hudson that night, too, Friday, July 27th. And the Chatham County Line play bluegrass at the Club Helsinki in Hudson, Friday, July 27th. There's also the Black Dome Music Festival coming to the Wyndham Civic and Performing Arts Center Saturday, July 28th and Sunday, July 29th. The Supertone Honky Tonk Roots and Rock Festival is at the Rojan Park in Copaic on Saturday, July 28th. With all sorts of bands, Bat Fangs, John Hatchet Band, Erica Lewis's Lonesome Doves, Thelma and the Sleaze, Donnie and the Drag, Burt Murder, Black Lake, The Nice Ones, and more. All day in Hillsdale or Copaic, the Rojan Park, Supertone, Honky Tonk Roots and Rock Festival, Saturday, July 28th. The Mountain Brauhaus German Festival is on Round Top at the Crystal Brook Mountain Brauhaus, 403 Winter Clove Road. That's Saturday, July 28th from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Arno Mai has aerial actor presentations with drones from Hong Kong and New York, from Wave Farm and E-Team, at the Field Sculpture Park at Oh Mai, Saturday, July 28th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also, Igustaman and Ju perform at PS21 in Chatham that night, Saturday, July 28th. The Russian violinist and British-Korean pianist perform all sorts of different styles. And Morning Dress and Patchwork Symphony, the Patchwork Symphony from Catskill, perform at Hilo in Catskill, Saturday, July 28th at 8 p.m. Colton the Maker and DJ Fulatha are at Spotty Dog Books and Ale in Hudson with a record release for Colton the Maker at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale in Hudson, 8 p.m. Saturday, July 28th. These events and more are online at the WGXC Community Calendar, wgxc.org.
Godspeed You Black Emperor returns to Hudson at Basilica on August 9th. Here's Godspeed You Black Emperor with Like Antennas to Heaven, music from the year 2000.
Thank you. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Green. Patty Metheny Strom is reporting for the Ghent Community Action Network and Connect Columbia that internet provider Spectrum has established a temporary location in the village of Chatham. Beginning July 23rd, new and existing Spectrum Charter customers are able to visit the company's temporary store located in the Blue Seal Feeds building at 90 Hudson Avenue. Customers can establish new service and swap or return equipment at that location. Of note, only credit card and check transactions are permitted. The store will be open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday until Wednesday, August the 1st. Strom writes that upgraded broadband service will be available, and I quote, on or after July 24th, end quote. Further information is available by calling 833-856-0704. Daniel Zuckerman is reporting for Columbia Green Media on the meeting held last week between Coxsackie elected officials, residents, and state representatives about Hegate Energy's proposed 50-megawatt solar farm planned for the vicinity of Farm to Market Road. Two administrative law judges ruled on the distribution of the Intervenor funds earmarked for use by applicants to cover expenses incurred by municipal and local parties as they participate in the pre-application scoping process and subsequent administrative proceedings. Mayor Mark Evans said after the meeting, the town and village will use the funds for attorney fees. In addition to the town and village, funds were also awarded to Sleepy Hollow Lake Development and to Saving Green, a civic group opposed to the project. Hecate Energy Development Director Gabriel Wapner said the meeting also marked the beginning of the stipulation process, which determines what will be studied and included in Hecate's application. The project will continue to be adjusted to fit the needs of the community, he added. Wapner said the project layout and proposal were included in Hegate's preliminary scoping statement submitted to the State Department of Public Service on May 29. Both the Coxsackie and Villagetown boards this month unanimously approved resolutions in opposition to Hegate's 400-acre solar project. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Hudson Valley Regional Director of New York Civil Liberties Union is not pleased with the sudden detention of Kingston chef Juan Carlos Vasquez. New York Civil Liberties Union Regional Director Shannon Wong is dismayed by the process. Wong said, and I quote, "People have been following what they thought were the rules, showing up for their appointments every 6 months, and then because the rules change, they are surprised when they get to those appointments and they are detained," end quote. A legal U.S. resident employed by the Anchor Restaurant and Pub in Kingston for more than 2 years, Vasquez was taken into custody by Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency officers July 19. Reports indicate it may have been over a past DWI charge. Friends of Vasquez have been trying to find out what led to his detention and are working to secure an attorney to represent him. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Glenn Blaine and Ellen Moynihan are reporting for the Daily News. Gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon on July 20th called for an end to solitary confinement and criminal justice reform that keeps all kids under 18 out of criminal court. During the campaign stop in Harlem, Nixon criticized Andrew M. Cuomo's approach to criminal justice reform, saying the agreement struck last year to raise the state age of criminal responsibility from 16 to 18 did not go far enough. That agreement allows 16- and 17-year-olds facing misdemeanor charges to be tried in family court, but keeps more serious felony crimes in adult criminal court. Nixon later wrote on Twitter, and I quote, "The estimated cost of youth incarceration in New York is a shocking $350,000 per year per child. Just imagine if we invested that sort of money in our children's schools at the beginning of their lives rather than in misery dollars down the line," end quote. Administration's officials scoffed at the comments and touted the governor's record on criminal justice reform. Alfonso David, Cuomo's chief counsel, defended the Raise the Age agreement, saying it was a critically needed reform that was achieved after a hard-fought battle with the legislature. Read the full story in the Daily News. The Berkshire Eagle is reporting that the Rebecca Foundation, an Oregon-based nonprofit organization, announced last week the opening of a new chapter in Columbia County. Megan Sandstrom will serve as the chapter president and represent the organization locally. Families struggling to afford diapers can apply online to be provided with reusable cloth diapers on loan for up to 1 year. Support and education for care and successful use of cloth diapers is also provided. Information on the Rebecca Foundation or to apply at www.clothforall.org. Read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org.
Here's today's congressional campaign update with news about Representative John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, his Democratic opponent Antonio Delgado, the rest of the campaign for the New York's 19th Congressional District.
Congress did not do much this week that wasn't more symbolic than real. Representative John Faso voted with a Republican majority July 19th, 229-180, against a theoretical carbon tax. Or said another way, Faso voted to express, quote, the sense of Congress that a carbon tax would be detrimental to the United States economy, unquote. On July 18th, Faso also voted with a Republican majority on another show vote to support, quote, the officers and personnel who carry out the important mission of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, unquote. That passed 244-35, with 133 Democrats voting present.
The National Weather Service in Albany has a flash flood watch in effect for the entire WGXC listening area through Wednesday. Forecast for Tuesday is mostly cloudy skies and a 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms, the high near 79. Tuesday night, there's another 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms overnight, with low around 70. Wednesday, 80% chance of rain, mostly after 8 a.m. Some of the storms could be heavy Wednesday, with a high near 75, and a low around 67 Wednesday night, with another 80% chance of rain. Thursday, again, there's a 60% chance of rain, with a high near 80, low around 65 Thursday night as the rain tapers off. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Tuesday, July 24th, Pete Levensee starts the day in Catskill with the WGXC morning show from 9 to 11 a.m., followed by The Forgotten Geek with Corey McCaslin from 11 until noon. After the noon, news headlines until 2 o'clock, music for the masses with Neva Wartell, followed by Backtracks in Time, hosted by Jack Sensabaugh. This month he'll be talking with Tom Satterley, a trustee of the Greene County Historical Society. Later on in the evening at 7 o'clock, mostly singles with Michael Wilde, followed by Battlefield Earth with Dan Seward from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in after the Battlefield Earth show, Wednesday, July 25th, in the early morning hours, for the Vital Weekly show at 1 a.m., new music from Amsterdam. 2 a.m. is the Watt from Pedro show, with Mike Watt from the Minutemen and Firehose and Iggy Pop playing new music for 3 hours in the middle of the night on Waveform Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day. A performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Ustad Shafet Khan performs at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill on August 6th. Here's music from Ustad Shafet Khan, Hamari Yad Mei, from Reflections and Praise, a 2015 album, before his August 6th performance at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill.
Oh, Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur, or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.